Hi, Rachel.
Hello.
I've been wanting to interview you for years. You're one of my favorite violinists, so thank you for taking the time.
Well, thank you.
You were in Iowa recently as part of Trio Settecento. So you play not only under modern Guarneri, but you play early violins and even the viola d'amore. So
this is Amestown and Gown in Iowa. That's right. That was a fun one.
Yeah,
well, the modern violin and the great violin concertos are what I do with most of my life. But just like you can't eat steak every single night for dinner, I love to mix it up a bit, and not only with repertoire, but also with instruments. And yeah, got some cool albums. Actually, my next album coming out in the spring is on Baroque violin, the Veracini Sonatas. And then in the fall, it'll be the Viola d'Amore concertos of Antonio Vivaldi. But but of course, my Mozart is on my beautiful 1742 Guarneri del Gesù, which is my quote-unquote modern violin.
That's very interesting. But here's another question for you. When you play Mozart on a modern violin, how does your experience playing on earlier instruments affect that, or does it?
Actually, that's a great question, and I do feel like having familiarity with the idea of historically informed performance has definitely benefited my approach to Mozart. The thing is, you know, these days we're looking backwards when we play music of the 1700s, like Mozart's concertos. People like me who spend so much of their life doing the big, fat, romantic concertos like Brahms, Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, etc., and then you're not supposed to bring that kind of sound, that kind of thickness and richness to Mozart's music. But the problem is, if you lighten up, then you kind of take all the life out of it. So then it sounds polite and pretty. And that's not right either. So what do you do? How can you sound brilliant and energetic without sounding thick? And so that's, I think, where, you know, having some experience with the earlier kinds of instruments can help my concept of sound when I then play on the modern equipment. But also, having an understanding of Mozart's operas has been very informative, because I feel like his violin concertos are so dramatic and really draw upon that same part of his personality, where you have, you know, a playful moment and then an exuberant moment and then a little calm and peaceful moment and then some melodrama and tragic moment, which turns out to all have been a big misunderstanding. And it's almost like there's a whole plot going on. And so, trying to bring that kind of drama while still retaining a Mozart kind of sound is, I think, the answer to making these pieces just as exciting as their later cousins.
Well, in the booklet notes and in a wonderful podcast of yours, you go through the first movement of the Fifth Violin Concerto, and you actually provide a little opera plot and characters and even words. Do you do that with other concertos?
Yes, absolutely. They've all got their little stories going on. And, you know, some of them more fleshed out than others. But definitely, even if, you know, I mean, this is, you know, a story without words, right? Which is different from a song without words, because it really is a story. And so I really try to find the personality in each phrase or even parts of a phrase. Sometimes he changes, you know, he mixes up the dialogue before even finishing a phrase. And it's constantly shifting, which is just, you know, so interesting. So one of the things that I've been doing over the past few years is actually performing all five Mozart violin concertos in a single evening's concert, which is a bit of a marathon, but definitely worth it, because it's just such an incredible journey for the performers and the audience to get to experience each of these great works in the context of its fellows. But it also, by doing them all in the same night, I couldn't just play each one like good Mozart, because that would have been five of the same thing. So it sort of forced me to take my interpretation to another level and seek for what makes each individual concerto unique and different from the other ones. And so I feel like I've even refined my understanding of them more deeply since the experience of performing all five on the same performance.
One other thing you did that is very unusual is and remarkable and wonderful is you wrote the cadenzas yourself. Mozart didn't leave cadenzas for the solo concertos. Very few violinists do that, and it seems to me that would take you even deeper into the music. You'd have to think like Mozart to do that? Could you say something about
that?
Well,
kind of, yeah, you have to, in order to start to craft your own cadenza, you have to sort of look at all the material from the movement, not only your own solo part, but the orchestra parts, to see what are the building blocks that you can draw upon to make your sort of fantasy on those themes. But, you know, it's also drawing upon your own personality in a way, because it's like, okay, how do I feel about Mozart? How can I make this cadenza truly me while still blending organically with what Mozart wrote? And it was a process that it never would have occurred to me to do when I was a young teenager, you know, performing Mozart's concertos with various orchestras. I did what most people do, and I played Joseph Joachim's cadenzas, or, you know, other cadenzas by long dead great violinists of the past. And it was sort of an intimidation thing. I thought, you know, why would I ever write my own cadenzas? There are these great ones that already exist, and mine wouldn't be nearly as good. But then I had the opportunity in my late teens to play a couple of works by composers of African descent from the time of Mozart, including the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who was actually known as Le Mozart Noir, the Black Mozart. And, of course, his music had sadly been unjustifiably neglected for so many years and, you know, revived more recently. So none of those great violinists of the 19th or early 20th century had been playing his concerto, and thus there were no written cadenzas for it. So, you know, because way back in the classical period, of course, people would have improvised just extemporaneously. So if I wanted to play these Afro-French concertos, I had no choice but to write my own cadenzas. But there wasn't as much, you know, of an intimidation thing, because it wasn't like mine would be compared to anyone else's. So I went ahead and did it because I kind of had to. And I realized, wait a sec, I've been thinking about this all wrong. It's not that, you know, how is mine as good as somebody else's? It's more about mine is the truest reflection of my own personality and the most naturally related to the way that I play the concerto. Of course, each of us plays a violin concerto differently than any other of us, right? Because each of us has our own individual personality that we bring to the table. And so, of course, it makes sense that each of us should play our own cadenza, which is going to be a reflection of that personality. So I was very honored that Carl Fischer, you know, chose to publish, you know, in other words, after this experience of writing my own cadenzas when I had to, I decided, well, I really want to write them for all the other concertos, Brahms, Beethoven, Paganini, Mozart, etc. So Carl Fischer published a collection of my cadenzas and other, like, encore virtuoso pieces and stuff. And it's the only collection in their series of somebody who's alive and also somebody who's female. So, you know, the other guys are like Heifetz and Kreisler. So I think it's so great that I can set this example for young artists, both through my recordings and through this published collection of my works, to show that writing your own cadenzas and your own virtuoso pieces is not something that violinists used to do, or just something that only these dead guys did. That, you know, you can still do it. And if Rachel can do it, anybody can do it, because it wasn't something that came to me naturally. Just like playing the instrument, you know, it didn't start out sounding good, but with practice, you know, there's gradual improvement. And so I really encourage every young artist to try to write their own cadenza and, you know, to get better and better at it until you have something that can really feel like your own.
One thing that you have done as an artist is you have explored a really wide range of repertory and artists of the past, people like Maud Powell, and also worked across many genres, like working with Mark O'Connor, teaching at his fiddle camp every year. Does that kind of range of experiences, how does that affect you when you play something like Mozart?
Yeah, well, I think the more you learn about music, the better you become at all the music you play. And certainly, you know, the great masterpieces are so close to my heart. Life wouldn't be complete without doing lots and lots of Tchaikovsky's and Brahms's and Mendelssohn's every year. But life also wouldn't be complete if that was all I did. So I also love to explore, you know, the breadth of repertoire. And especially doing different kinds of non-classical music, I think, nurtures your creativity. I really encourage, you know, every young musician to, you know, doesn't matter what style, whether it's a traditional fiddle style, doing a bit of rock music, a bit of jazz, whatever strikes your fancy, just to create. Because in classical, you know, we do have certain things, you know, certain ways in which what we do is you know, athletics, an Olympic sport, it's like being a figure skater having to nail every triple lutz. You can't be sloppy and have that add personality, like if you're playing the blues. So you have to be so technically precise, and you have to have, you know, such an understanding of these great compositions. But then at the same time, you also want to bring your imagination to the picture. And I think doing different kinds of improv stuff just makes you, you know, have more ideas. You're not going to at all play Mozart as if you're fiddling or as if you're jamming on a heavy metal song, not in any way whatsoever, but yet maybe you'll just have more interesting thoughts because you've opened your mind up to inspiration from, you know, just experimentation. So I think that's the important thing of being able to sort of be a bit diverse in your musical activities.
One last question for you, Rachel. This is, as far as I know, your first recording with Avi and with some very legendary Mozart players, the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields led by Sir Neville Mariner. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, of course, I grew up with albums of Sir Neville Mariner and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, and they were the guys who played on the film Amadeus. So that was also a big inspiration when I was a little kid. That came out when I was 10. So, yeah, it was just a dream come true to get to do my Mozart album with some of the greatest Mozart interpreters in the world. And not only their brilliant musicianship, but also their approach to the recording session was such an inspiration. Sir Neville Mariner, first of all, he was 89 at the time of the sessions last year, and the amount of energy that he had was incredible. But also the way that my colleagues were so supportive of helping to bring to life, you know, my vision for these pieces, but at the same time, very open about speaking up whenever they had an idea, some suggestion, and so forth. It was really interesting, you know, even in the 2D moments when I wasn't even playing, they would do something that sounded absolutely gorgeous as far as I was concerned, and then they would say, you know what, I think we can do that even better, and they would do it again, and it would be even better. And so the fact that they weren't satisfied with something that sounded perfect, but they were aiming for beyond perfect, you know, to be like ideal. And yeah, that was a great lesson.
Wow, a real collaboration. Well, congratulations on this CD, and we look forward to all your future projects. And you're from Chicago. It's not too far from Iowa. I hope we will be seeing you in person before too long.
I hope so too. Always happy to visit my fellow Midwestern states.